Welcome to the Change Society Show. My name is Pat Lyons, the host and founder of Sullivan & Cerny, the Change Society. Today we have got a great show for all the listeners, and we are concentrating on this trending topic based around this booming executive gig economy. And I'm talking to two pioneers in this space, Malcolm Lambell and Christian McMahon. And they are sharing some real gold to everyone that's listening to this. Both have different stories, a different journey into being a portfolio CIO, being an executive gigster, and actually been re-listening to this podcast three or four times. Every time I listen to it, some real gold comes out. So for any of you listening to this that are thinking about making that move to portfolio, our portfolio, or making that move from permanent executive to interim executive, do listen to this because they are sharing their real story around how they made that move. I really hope you enjoy it. And now over to the show. Today we're going to be focusing on a very hot topic which is trending currently at the moment, which is the executive gig economy and this proliferation of execs that are now starting to think about a portfolio career. So I've invited and welcomed two close associates of Sullivan & Cerny onto the show, Mr. Malcolm Lambell, welcome, and Mr. Christian McMahon, who both have made that move many years ago. So Malcolm very much more from a permanent CIO in the financial services space, has made that move into interim CIO, investor CIO, sort of portfolio type CIO activities. Yeah. And Christian was one of the first CIOs in the market to focus on the social side of aspects. So both two interesting stories to share with you today, but enough for me. So Malcolm, a quick introduction for the listeners.
Yeah, quick background. So long-term CIO in banks and insurance companies, and about 7 years ago reached a point where I was with a very big bank that was going down the tubes, and engineered a redundancy, to be perfectly frank. And for the first time I really thought about setting up my own business, which I position as a consultancy, but it's actually more interim, it's me on fees, though I do consulting and I do mentoring and I do interventions. And I guess, I mean, it's been incredibly successful. I can't believe how much fun it's been, how successful it's been in terms of personal satisfaction and personal reward. And I guess 2 years into that, maybe two, 3 years into that, I've got a little bit of an entrepreneurial bug and set up a information security business called Rivington Information Security. And that's been fantastic fun. So, yeah, that's me really. Christian?
Hi, yes, I have performed a number of global CIO roles over the years. My career started to change when I discovered new technology, social scene, and I found that through travelling an awful lot for my permanent role, I wasn't really getting the work-life balance that I was looking for. So I tried to pivot in my career and look at, could I take on a role in which I was able to do what I really enjoyed doing while still adding value commercially, growing my own experience and skill sets, and embracing new horizons for me in my career. I decided to move towards a portfolio-based career at that stage, where I could do the things I enjoyed and improve on the things I enjoyed and do well and do better, but whilst engaging with companies and providing those services and bringing them forward from strategic positions which they hadn't encountered or in which they wanted to grow, and take companies on a strategic journey from which they weren't able to really perform with incumbent CIOs. So I've moved into a portfolio at the moment I'm very comfortable with. I do a lot of fractional work where I try to make a quick impact with companies, on quick hit on strategic roles, make a real difference, try and punch the way through existing problems or strategic issues and take them forward. So I do a lot of work, M&A, social, strategic, engagement on large projects, and taking companies forward in ways which, looking at a different lens to issues that they have and trying to solve them as quickly as possible.
I probably get about 5 executives that come into our office per week, and the prevalent message that they say to me is that they're starting to lose the appetite for the safety of a permanent role. They feel the kind of politics is now starting to get to a level which, you know, is putting them off, and they want to explore how they can make that jump to interim or that portfolio career. I mean, what's your story, Malcolm, in terms of the first steps that you made and the things that you had to change and to make that interim step a success?
My story is, I think, very different to Christian's in that mine was a very deliberate, planned move. So I literally went to speak to a headhunter after I left the bank about another permanent role, and she said, "I don't know why you're doing permanent. You're classic interim. You've got some big stuff on your CV, some recent big stuff at the bank as a program director. Why don't you go interim?" And I know it sounds ridiculous, but I need that little push. And after that, I literally switched overnight from saying, "I'll seek another permanent job," to, "I'm going to turn that off and I will seek an interim role." I invested a lot of time and money in stalking agencies and getting to know them. Obviously, I had a lot of really great headhunters that I knew, but I hadn't really dealt with a lot of agencies in that time. And so it was a very deliberate move to think quite deeply about what I was going to do. I just didn't want to do 5 days a week on the same client all the time. I wanted to do a bit of mentoring with it, but something a bit more nurturing. I ended up doing some outplacement, and I also did some consulting. And it was a very rich mix. And I think the other thing, I think a lot of CIOs think the work they're going to get is all the dross. Nothing could be further from the truth. I've had some big leadership jobs, very exciting stuff. And a message to all CIOs who are thinking around this route is, you're sitting on a wealth of experience, an absolute incredible wealth of experience. It's a really tough job, and that applies elsewhere, no matter what you do, in my opinion.
And Christian, I can recall a conversation we had a few weeks back where you said that you didn't know how much you knew until you landed your first interim gig. So do you want to re-explain that for some of the listeners? I thought it was a really interesting point.
Yeah, I think when you work as a CIO, you're pigeonholed maybe by the C-suite or peers as the guy who does technology. But what you are effectively are is a leader focused on technology. What you don't realise is that as you're working for a number of roles in a number of companies, you're absorbing knowledge about operations, marketing, sales, and you become, by working across the C-suite as a CIO, has a great vista across the company and organisation. They're able to get involved in a lot more things than other roles are. So you don't realise what you're taking in and what you're working on until you go into the interim market. And you go into companies, you pitch yourself initially when you first go interim as a technologist, because that's what you're comfortable with. You've made the leap from permanent to interim, and you feel comfortable as a technologist, and you've taken on the guise of an interim and the responsibilities, because they are different to in a permanent role. But when you go in, you start talking about technology roles, but then you start contributing. And you contribute in ways in which you hadn't thought that you would when you're involved in senior level discussions. And as an interim, you often get doors open quicker, you get invites into meetings that maybe you wouldn't get in a permanent position with your initial 90 days. So you're able to hit the ground running in a lot of ways, and people see you adding value, not just as a technologist. And the technologist label really kind of falls away as you do the initial work. And then you find yourself, if you get renewed or you kind of ask to do different projects, they're not technology focused. Mm. They're just using your skill sets. And that's a really pleasing moment when you work as an interim, where you kind of release from the shackles of technology, and making the move to interim hits home at that stage that it was the right thing for you to do, and that you are tagged as sort of a corporate weapon, where you're able to take on different responsibilities and different roles, but go into the boardroom as a leader, not just a leader that's technology focused.
I think Callum's going to be hashtagging that corporate weapon thing. Can I go back to a point that you mentioned earlier? It really intrigued me, because I do get a lot of CIOs who say, you know, I don't think interim's for me. You know, I like to own the transformation. I want to see things through to the end. But what you said earlier is challenging that. Can we unpack that a bit more?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I seriously thought, Pat, that I would be going into companies and being called program director and be sitting in board meetings with rag status up to my ears. And frankly, I was quite scared of that. That wasn't what I wanted to do. What I found was, my first gig was a BPO organisation where I was going out selling, and I was going out talking to CIOs, and of course they love it because I've got grey hair, they know you've got experience, you've got, you know, a good CV. Second one was a 3-year gig, which again was totally transformational, building a business services function. Third one, a great 2-year gig, where I was integrating something from the States and something from the UK into an application shared services. So, I mean, I was shocked. And interestingly, every single gig has got better in terms of its richness and fun. And the people I work with are fantastic. And it's shocked me. And the other thing is, and I'm sure Christian agrees with this, you have enormous personal power as an interim, way above any CIO who's a permanent. A number of CIOs I talk to, as you do, I think, Pat, thinking, wow, I want a bit of that. I think people are scared of it, but I think they think, God, you guys seem to really enjoy this. Mm. You really seem to get a lot from it. So I think it's fascinating. It's been a big learning curve for me.
Yeah, I had a CIO in to see me earlier this afternoon, and he was saying, I've made my decision, I'm going to go interim.
Yeah.
I want to deliver something of value.
Yeah.
And I want something to focus on.
Yeah.
You know, look, I know I'm going to get the politics, but the fact that I can actually walk away from it or hold up the truth serum or the truth card to a board is something that really interests me.
And I think on that, my first gig, my client, who was a non-IT person, wanted to do something in India. I won't bore you with the details. But it was highly risky. And I said to him, look, I don't want to be unhelpful here, but I'm covered by £1 million professional indemnity. If you do what you want to do, I will probably have to resign, because you're going to damage my brand and I can't afford for that. And he stopped what he was doing. And the reason, the power I had, was I wasn't desperate for the job. I couldn't go and get another job, another gig. So it does give you that power. And it's not a power with a negative slant, it's power with a positive slant.
Yeah. Christian, social CIO. Talk to me about your journey from, you know, not being on social and maybe having that mindset of, you know, finding it difficult to share online, through to being a top 10 global influencer, and how that's helped you in your portfolio career.
Well, I was first approached initially to write for a magazine, and I'd never really thought about writing. I'd written reports, board reports, PowerPoint solutions, etc. But what I didn't think about was writing about particular ideas that people would want to read. And so my social journey started then. So I started writing pieces monthly on a regular basis, and then start again and paid for it as well. So you initially, everyone will approach you to write, raise your profile and get in the press and people understand who you are. But then to start getting paid for writing was a real milestone for me. But I found it very cathartic writing, but I would write massive tomes. And I had to learn how to write shorter and shorter and shorter, more distinct, succinct pieces. I found it really, really difficult. So my journey started with that, and then I started getting into social scene. Twitter was launched, so I joined Twitter early 2007, and I love new things, I love new technologies, and I love the medium of it. I love the way in which you could communicate and talk to people that you'd never normally have access to. And at that time, technologists kind of looked at me and said, why are you getting involved? It will never catch on. You know, no, this will go nowhere. Nobody will want to read this. It's a fad. And I kind of thought, well, take the technology and new technology factor away. It's great to look at new ways in which people communicate. How many of us still have a fixed phone on our desks? Mm. You know, more of our communication is via mobile. Now, disruption of communication is rife. And I think the social media has really drawn that. You know, a lot of, you know, memorandums and other company communications to a close. And now most technical support, communication with, if you go out for dinner, you communicate, you look on social media. So it's a different medium to look at, and I embraced that, and I started to look forward to writing tweets, and I tweeted about 100 times a day. It was quite ludicrous. But then I started thinking, well, you've got to focus. You know, if you look at it from a sort of leadership perspective, write less but focus more.
Yeah.
So I started to concentrate on that, excuse me, of writing more and more in terms of, and posting stuff that I wanted to read. I wasn't finding much on social media then, which is essentially Twitter in 2007, that I wanted to read. So I joined some like-minded groups at that stage and lists and started to share information and kind of grew my own identity on there. Started owning some content, started owning some hashtags and started to really post content. And my subscriber count grew and grew and grew. And I think this is great. You know, I'm really enjoying this. But you've got to kind of be focused. And I think that sometimes people worry about what other people will think of what they post too much. Mm. Back then, through until about now, CIOs don't really get involved on social media too much. The ones I try to convince to get involved are worried about what people will think. You know, they'll make a comment that may be misconstrued by a vendor, supplier, recruiter, peer, whatever. But I think you've got to have confidence in what you're trying to say. Mm. Confidence in your message. I'm never controversial. I don't get political. I don't talk about things that I think that will anger people or get consternation. So I think that what you want to do is share information you want to read, look into communicating with like-minded people, grow your initial horizons of what you wanted to do and who you wanted to communicate with. I've grown into quite a significant chunk of what I do. So I do a lot of work that's attributed to my social status. And I think that that has amazed me. And the biggest turning point for me came about 4 years ago, where I was approached on my influence, not on my name. And I think that was a sea change for me in terms of how you position yourself with social media as an influencer, rather than a CIO by a name that some people know and will place and give a role to. And I think being known as an influencer in a number of categories is very, very powerful. It took me by surprise, but when I sort of turn 360 on it and looked at why they were doing it, made massive sense. So I think that, you know, my advice is to any CIOs is get involved, don't worry about too much about what people think, be yourself, get on it, start using it, focus on what you're interested in. If you're going to use it for your own personal use, do it for your personal use. If you want to be commercial, I'm always happy to chat to people and help people through and begin their journey.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, when I started my journey with SNS and hired Callum, I found it really difficult to share anything for the same kind of mindset. Mm. But what I found is actually quite rewarding to share. Mm. And actually, more recent times, we're starting to get people that are approaching us interested in what we're doing and, you know, the kind of tone of the way that we approach some of our article shares. I mean, have you found that it's been an enabler for your portfolio career, Christian?
Well, absolutely. I have worked with a number of very, very large brands as a result of my technology, my social influence status. And I think they've approached me because they see you as an influencer writing about a topic. And hence, you know, they want to get you to write about their brand. Whereas before, influencer marketing was very naive and it was just getting a few people to an event because they had a name. But now then they can rank your influence. They want to get you to their events. Yeah. They want you to get you to talk about their product.
Yeah.
And I think that in a number of clients I've worked with, we've made a significant actual revenue difference to product campaigns that we've worked with me as a social influencer, and hence you grow your business in that respect. The tools to measure influence, social influence based against product, brand, role, company, are now rife, and you can measure any of those. So companies are able to pick and choose who they want to work with on their brand. You don't have to be Kim Kardashian, you know. You just have to be someone who can understand technology and get the message across that people want to hear. And when you're at that status, that's what they want. That's what brands will crave for people to work with that understanding, that sway. But also, if you can have a social campaign that makes a revenue increase on a product, it's a very powerful thing. Mm. And as more people start to use the social sphere, the influence will grow. And I think it's a very, very large and growing area of social driving portfolio careers.
So if we think of like the executive gig economy as an umbrella on the top and the different flavours that sit underneath, so fractional work, advisory work, interim management, partnering with private equity and VC companies and in the investor CIO like yourself,
yeah.
Malcolm.
Yeah.
Can we just unpack like a few of them? So I've got a love-hate relationship with the word fractional. I mean, I think it can be improved, but what does fractional mean to you?
Fractional to me, if you look at it from the customer's point of view, they want a heavy-hitting individual to come in to resolve or punch through a strategic issue they're not able to with incumbent staff or with the product vendors that they have. So what they're looking for is somebody with specific experience, with gravitas and the intellectual ability to push through and resolve that for them as quickly as possible. They're often referred to, and I don't like the word fractional as much as anybody, and I think impact CIO for me is what I try and would market it as. And I think what you're trying to achieve is something heavyweight, but very quickly, in a way in which you can have the gravitas, the influence, and the ability to go in and resolve a situation, which can often be political, but is an issue. So either way, it's a strategic problem the company needs to resolve. And I think that the company will want someone to come in and do that. And in the industry, in the recruitment industry, it's typically referred to as a fractional CIO. Mm. But to me, it's someone who can solve a problem very quickly.
Yeah, and it's and do you find you get kind of access to the board and almost feel like that kind of, you know, sounding board, independent, that's in the board, helping with alignment and going out on special projects and things like that? Is that kind of what you find when you're out as an impact CIO?
Yes, I think as Malcolm alluded to earlier, what you're able to do as an interim is often to get indoors into meeting rooms quicker than you would if you're in a permanent role. You don't have to go through the political layer, the 90-day layer. You're more often given carte blanche to go in and do what needs to be done to solve the problem. That's why you're there. And I think, you know, the ability to do that is key. But what you have, you need to quickly show your influence, ability, candor, and understanding of the company culture to know how fast you can push the change at and what rate they can digest it. So I think that you do get a lot of opportunities far quicker than you would in a permanent position, but you have to have the ability to back that up and deliver upon it. And as they're shorter term roles, you're going to have to turn around a lot quicker and do a lot more to fulfill your portfolio.
I think it's interesting, Pat, that in my last gig, I had a lot of exposure to the CEO and the COO reporting to him. And it was more my boss who was saying, look, this is Malcolm, he's the guy who's going to deliver what you want. And, you know, it's a very supportive, quite interestingly, not you better deliver, but what can we do to help you? Mm. And you go in, I always call it stripes on your arm. You've got stripes on your arm, you've got credibility, and the CEOs are more, just more respectful. It's quite bizarre, and it's very different, as I've said before, as how you're treated as a permanent CIO. You always seem to be a bit of the kicking boy, you know, whereas you go in the interim roles, you've got a very clear objective, what you've got to deliver, you're there to do it, you come in with credibility, and you get exposure, and you get support, which, again, surprised me.
They've done their due diligence on you,
references,
interviews, feedback on you from the market maybe.
Yeah.
But what you're giving them is impact. And I think that if they're not able to solve a problem with their incumbent staff or, you know, through their existing network of people, then somebody who come in and do this will get given access to a number of people and be given license to do it. And I think the license to do it is the key, because as a permanent CIO, you have to fight for that. And that's something you achieve after quite a long period of time, often. But if you're given carte blanche and the door is open and you can push through and deliver, if you deliver, you will be given more to deliver. You'll be trusted. And I think that that's key.
And I think the other thing is, you know, it's great when you go into a company that's got the far-sightedness, if that's a word, to actually have somebody brought in to do the transformation. I get very frustrated when people say, yeah, well, he can do it. Well, typically, he is a line manager or she who has never done transformation before. He or she runs an operation, has no idea what it takes to move from A to B in a creative, considered way to get you from one state to a new state. And when a company says, you know what, we need an interim to do this, who's done it before, who's got the, you know, got the gravitas, as Christian says, it's very, very good news that they get that. Because otherwise, I think they're going to fail.
Well, I mean, you know, some of the conversations the three of us have had, you know, we're all very passionate about, you know, interim management in this particular industry. Why do you think it's on the rise at the moment? You know, why do you think organisations are now starting to turn to interim management more than they have done before?
I think speed of change, and we all know about digital, and I hate that word because it means everything to everybody. But I think there are, you know, markets are moving quicker, businesses are moving quicker. The timeline on recruiting a CIO, I mean, you know better than me, Pat, is probably 9 months. If you take into account their exit time and everything else, and the whole market could have moved on to that, so an opportunity could have been lost. So I think speed is one thing. I think flexibility and being able to cherry pick what you want from somebody, and really get the individual who's going to fit in the culture and everything else, and a little risk. You know, I, as you guys know, I always say, as a permanent CIO, you've got 100 days. In my book, you've got 10 days as an interim CIO or whatever, you know, interim role you've got, 10 days to make an impact. And that's a different mindset.
I mean, let's not forget that companies are now under more commercial pressure than they ever have been in the past. You've got lots of words floating around, as Malcolm mentioned, digital, change, transformation, renewing products, customer experience. Company boards are being pressured in these commercial ways that they probably thought they had a lot more time to deliver upon, but now shareholder pressure, external NED pressure, is pushing them to deliver against these. So boards and C-suites now need to deliver. And if you're under an increasing pressure to deliver in a shorter timeline and you don't have the incumbent staff, then the interim angle is a strong way to go. Yeah. You're going to get results quickly, you're going to get experience quickly, but it still does take, I always say, a strong leader in a company, as Malcolm said, that can take somebody into the company at probably a greater expense than they would in a permanent role,
yeah,
but allow them to seed that level of work and delivery experience to that individual for their company. So what they are getting is skills, experience, agility, but speed of delivery. Yeah. And I think speed of delivery is very, very key here, that could knock 6 to 8 months out of a year's schedule by delivering a high impacting interim. Mm. And I think that that's what a lot of companies need to deliver and are being asked to deliver. Mm. But it does still take a strong board to get an individual to come in to punch through that wall for them and make a difference.
I did a mini survey with my client, a couple of my clients last year, and said, look, why do you hire interims? You know, why are they kind of your go-to de facto routes to consulting or delivery? They're like, because I can trust them.
Yeah.
You know, they're there, they're loyal to me, they want to over-deliver, they want to leave their IP, and they want to benefit the organisation.
Yeah.
And they've got that spirit of you're only as good as your last gig. So yeah, it's so important that they put in a good show.
I think that's so right, Pat. And the thing that always strikes me is, and I try to explain this to people, is that you know, if they buy me or buy Christian or any interim, you're not buying somebody who's going to develop in role. You know, typically people move from one permanent job to another because it's bigger and adds to the portfolio and is a bigger package, but there's a degree of risk in that because they haven't done that before. Maybe they've done the scale, maybe they've done the culture, maybe they've done multiple regions, whatever. When you buy a Christian or a Malcolm, we've done it before. You know, so we're probably doing smaller jobs than we've done in our career, bizarrely, and that's the guarantee.
So you look at some of the other things in the executive gig economy and who actually is fueling it. So if you look at sort of FTSEs that are under pressure, you know, mid-caps that need support because they're going on, you know, a growth spurt and they want someone to help industrialise the processes or make sense of it. I'm seeing a lot of opportunities coming from the PE and VC space. So, you know, this kind of CIO in residence that's starting to pop up. Why do you think it's happening? I mean, is it consulting fatigue? Do you think because a lot of these opportunities used to go to management consulting firms?
Yeah, I think it definitely is. I was talking to someone only this week about working with one of the big consulting firms, and I used to work with this guy, and we were just chuckling to ourselves about how much we paid for a part-time partner. You know, I had no real value other than try to sell more. One really good lady was the sort of senior person on point. And then there was one more resource that was probably quite good. Then there was four very immature, very inexperienced junior consultants who were just charging £1,500 a day. And I, you know, from my sort of, think I have good appreciation of value, and that wasn't value. So I think that model's dead now, or is dying slowly. I also know that lots of consulting firms are looking to the interim market to take, you know, people like me in to work with them, because they can't find the resources they want. They don't want to increase their bench and take that risk. So I think the model's starting to morph, and I think it's quite rapid, actually. I think, you know, I think there's a fantastic opportunity for, there for the, if we can mobilise interims to solve problems, I think it's going to be brilliant.
Interesting. Now, you've made an interesting journey to investor, CIO, and I was really impressed with the workshop that you delivered to our CIO 2.0 community, and I know got some really good feedback on it. Talk about your journey there, because one thing stuck in my mind was, like, after I got a couple of gigs under my belt, I started to get confident, and confidence grew, and then opportunities started to come to me around, you know, board spots or an opportunity to invest. So I know lots of our listeners will be really interested in that.
So it's a bit bizarre, but I guess I got my second year accounts, and look, I'm used to having a set of accounts. You work in a FTSE 100 company where you're depreciating 20 million because of the investments you made. And I was going through the accounts, so I just started to laugh at myself, because we were depreciating a laptop when it was about 500 quid or 300 quid, whatever it was. And I just, it just sort of started to spark in my mind that actually it was quite nice having a set of accounts that you delivered. It's quite nice having an invoice that you send out. Now, I probably paid the same gross as I was at a permanent CIO. I was well paid as a CIO, and I don't deny that. But somehow there's more value, you feel more value. And so my business, which is called Transformation Partners, I felt that it would never be sold. And I wanted to challenge myself, and I want to see if I could set up a business that could be sold at some point in the future, hence the information security business. And I just got to a point where I thought, I wonder if I could land this. Because my business plan as an interim was thought through, but not really intricate. And so, I've set up the business. It's got 10 employees. We're in the process of looking at growing. Got 5 or 6 really good clients, getting great feedback, and the plan is to grow it and eventually sell it. But I think it's the thing that struck me was, you know, if you'd asked me 20 years ago, have you got the skills to do that? I said, oh, no, there's no way I could do that. Actually, CIOs do have the skills to do that. It's got to be a little bit creative, got to think about how they're going to plan it, apply all the disciplines they got from working with technology, business, finance, stakeholders, etc., etc., and marshal that into something and find the right people. So I found a really good CEO who runs a business, I'm the chairman, and it's all very doable, and it's enormously satisfying. It really is, and I have an appetite to do more.
And Christian, you've got quite the portfolio in terms of advising startups, doing a lot of mentoring, being involved in, you know, certain kind of speaking engagements. Talk to me how you started to kind of pick those up, and some, you know, potentially some advice for people that are looking to, you know, pick up other points of interest to make that step into portfolio CIO.
I think making the move to interim enabled me to have more time to do the things I enjoy doing. And I think one of the big leaps for me from leaving a permanent position was being able to do the things that I wanted to do and I thought I was good at. But it also freed up my time to accept opportunities as and when it arose. So from doing a lot of the social work, I was also asked to start mentoring some startups, and I did. I now work with about 3 very large startup accelerators globally, and about 15 current mentorships of CIOs of startups. But the key thing for me is that I enjoy it. It's paying back my knowledge. It keeps me on the ball technologically. You know, it's good mental practice. You're running a number of businesses, but you know, it's great to see them fly. It's great to see them achieve an exit. It's great to help them gain investment and just see good people with good ideas do good things. And I think that's quite important to keep our whole startup economy of technology flowing and running. And I enjoy it. I enjoy it immensely. We had some great results of selling some of the startups to quite big corporates and seeing people realise something that they've given up their careers to do be successful. It's enormously satisfying. But as a result, I grew more confident in terms of working with small companies to large companies and helping large companies look at technology vistas that they wouldn't normally get a window into, and helping them work with the startup community to help them solve strategic issues, take an investment in, purchase, or work, just work with these guys and see the enormous value that they're giving them. More agile, more nimble, more driven, more focused, but passion. And passion is the one thing that you see in startups that sometimes is gone in large corporates and in individuals in large corporates when they've been in situ for a long time. So I try to inject passion into everything I do to try to show to people that you're enjoying what you're doing. You know, as an interim, every day is great. You're going into new organizations, you're going into new opportunities, and you're working on what you want to work on and working with like-minded individuals to deliver good things. And I think that it's anathema to what a lot of people think, where interims are short-term focused people. Interims want to work with companies, build a reputation, build a relationship and trust factors so they get repeat business. You know, it works both ways. But I think that working as a portfolio CIO, you need to keep abreast of technology. So me working with startups, doing speaking engagements, keeping myself nimble, mentally, technologically agile is key in my aspect of what I do. So I'm able to take on ideas that other people may have balked upon or other people may have passed on, but I see value in it because I've worked with or seen the technology before, and I know that something coming down the line could solve the problem for them as opposed to what's on the market. So I get to see a great vista of technology that's coming, not only on the market, but it's coming 12, 24 months time. So you're able to jump on opportunity far quicker. And I think speaking engagements come off the back of that because you're doing more than the standard role, but things that are quite interesting, and it's good to share them with people, and people want to engage with that.
Interesting. So this is a kind of the reality of what I will hear weekly. So I don't doubt as people listen to this thinking, I want some of that at some point in my career. But the reality is that people have kids, they have a mortgage, they've got financial commitments. It's perceived as risky to not have the safety of permanent. I know that's changing, but the reality is people are going to be thinking this. So just to finish off this podcast, can you two share some of your experiences about the early days and then kind of highlight some of the steps people can make now to start moving towards a portfolio career? Because you both mentioned confidence, and you both mentioned that the confidence started to grow. So if you could both share your kind of story on that, I think it'd be really powerful.
Yeah, so if I go first, Christian, I think that what I've found in my career is I've been made redundant many times, and I've often walked out of a job on a Friday and started a new one on a Monday. So I think the first thing is, as a permanent CIO, keeping a really good ear to the ground on your position, because it's a difficult position. You can get fired, made redundant for frankly nothing you've done. You know, I've been bought by bigger companies many times, and of course the incoming CIO is the one that gets the job if they're bigger. It's the way it goes. And so I think being very fleet of foot, seeing what's going to come down the pipeline, being out 18 months, maybe a year, and you're thinking is really important. I think I would start to develop my thinking a lot earlier than when I've been made redundant or I want to go and do it. I know that sounds crazy, but get way ahead of the game, really think it through, really do detailed thought process about how you're going to attack it, and then invest in it. So as I said, when I left the bank and started to look at an interim career, I worked really hard. I probably spent about £3,000 coming up to the city, meeting agents. They said, come for a coffee. I was there within 3 or 4 days, keeping it live, getting in front of people, treating everyone as a serious approach, as an interview. And I found that I got 2 offers within 2 weeks. My CV was strong, but you never know. I think protect your brand value and protect your day rate. Don't take cheap work. Don't take work that's just to get income. I don't think that's good. And then I think build it out. So I built out actually a consultancy, which was 80% revenue from me, but also 20% revenue from other activities such as mentoring, such as consulting, such as running workshops. I built some intellectual property. It's all fun. It's not hard work. Mm-hmm. So I think you just progress it. But I mean, I would recommend to people, don't think you can finish a CIO job on day on the Friday and start building consultancy on the Monday, because the burn time and the cost is going to be horrendous. Make sure you've got a revenue stream, get some money in, and start to build whoever you want. And if you're going to build a consultancy, you know, work with other people to do it. The entrepreneurial part of me came as a natural progression, and I intend to continue to develop that over time. It just came as something I really wanted to do, something I could apply, you know, I challenged myself to do it, and something you apply, as I said earlier, it's the whole process too, and planned it. And you think if you give it a lot of thought, document it, because I needed to go to investors to get some money, I need to have something that was convincing, and just do it, really.
Mm. So there's a bit in there you're saying about building your network before you need it.
Absolutely.
Because that's like one of the biggest mistakes I see execs make, which is they land a big gig and then they drop their relationship with the headhunters.
Yeah.
They drop the relationship with all the people that they've worked with over the last number of years.
Yeah.
And they just get totally engrossed.
Well, you and I have talked about this before, and again, going back to the placement mentoring I do, it always goes to the same thing, which is, what's your network like? I even spoke to somebody the other day. I was sadly to make him redundant about 3 or 4 years ago, actually, one the other day. And I said to him, you know, are you on LinkedIn? And he said, do you think it's worth it? And I almost fell off my chair. So, you know, LinkedIn is a great tool to document your network, to see where people move to and to keep in contact with them. And I think you're absolutely right, Pat. You know, you invest in a network when you're in a job, not when you need the network. You do it before you need it. That's so critical.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely spot on, Pat. I think you must make your network strong while the sun is shining, not when it starts raining.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's the classic issue that you see so often. You know, this may be contentious, but a good permanent CIO does not make a good interim CIO.
Absolutely, Christian.
I think that, you know, it is a mindset change, it's an ability change, it's a cultural change that you cannot just, Malcolm said, right, you cannot walk out on a Friday and go in on a Monday. It's a completely different mindset than the Friday permanent role.
Yeah.
What you're looking for from companies, they don't want to hear a technologist talking about technology and about acronyms. That's what they've already got.
Yeah.
They want progress, delivery, change, transformation. They want you to give them something they don't have, and they will pay you well for it. I think one of the key things that you have to think about is that ability in yourself. You have to be confident. I know we keep mentioning the confidence word, but an interim has the ability to go into a company and know it could dissolve in a week. It could dissolve in a month. You could be renewed for 6 months.
Yeah.
But what you have is faith in your ability and what you can do. And I think that's key. And sometimes a permanent CIO making the leap across doesn't have that confidence, because when things change from what they're used to in a permanent ecosystem, they may not be comfortable with that change. But as a good interim, you need to be able to not only see that change, accept that change, and make opportunity from that change. So you've got to go knocking on doors sometimes to get what you want, to be able to deliver what you need to be able to do. You've got to build your own measurables. And having that confidence to do that in a company is key. And I think that, so, you know, going back to it, I would say confidence, build it up, know what's going to come down the line, listening to guys like us talking and others you could meet, you know, across the piece, will give you that feedback. So I don't think what we're saying is novel, but I think that you've got to accept that you do need to change your mindset, your capability, your ability to ride and accept change whilst delivering change, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think you've got to be open to opportunity and seize upon it and look at things through a different lens. You know, one of the things I often say is we're brought in to look at it through a different lens than the current internal capability.
Yeah.
If you're able to look at 2 or 3 ways to do one thing, I think you're pretty good, no matter what your role you're looking or what, you know, what area of the business you're looking after. If you're able to think on your feet, problem solve, problem manage quickly, and in a resolute way that builds commercial confidence and trust with you and the people that you're working for, you're going to get repeat business. And ultimately, a good interim wants repeat business. But you do need to hark back to being ready for it. Don't think your good permanent CIO is going to make you good at the interim role. It's a different mindset. It will stand you in very, very good stead, but it's a different world. Yeah. Talk to people, engage with people, talk to Pat, look at what SNS are doing, understand how they can work with you to help place you, change your mindset, and give you roles that be commensurate to your ability, skills, and what you want to achieve. Don't think you're going to go out of a permanent role into the same level CIO role as an interim. You've got to build yourself up from through the trust, respectability, and network to be able to accept bigger roles.
It's getting that support network.
Absolutely.
And just asking for help. You know, as you said, you know, one of the things we do here is we help people make that shift.
Yeah.
It's exactly, you do the same.
So I do,
And as do you. So, any listeners out there, if you're keen to explore this further, then I'll give you the contact details on the show notes. But listen, drawing to a close, where is all this going? What's your view on where this executive gig economy is going in the next decade?
I think companies will, on a C-suite level, stay away from hiring people not on a fixed-term contract. I think in a C-suite, you are moved towards fixed-term contracts, a number of deliverables, a number of objectives, strategic objectives put upon you in harness to that contract, and I think you'll be measured against what you achieve and what your success rate is against that in that contract. And I think if you think about that, that's pretty much starting to happen now with interims. You know, I think you've got to just put it onto C-suite to deliver. You've got to be commercial. You've got to look at the customer experience. You can no longer ignore the customer. Customer is now king. Technology underpins an awful lot of what you're doing. There's not a lot you can ignore now or hide from. You need to be aware of everything the rest of the board is doing, but I think deliver quicker. So I think the mindset commercially of larger corporates will be to put you on a fixed-term contract rather than hope it will be okay. They want to have the ability, if you look at football, you know, they want to have the ability to make transfers, they want to have the ability to take people off the bench, put people back on the bench, rotate the squad. And I think if you're able to rotate, you've got a powerful team, but you don't want to carry passengers. And I think more so than ever before, boards can't carry passengers. It's too expensive. You know, it's too commercially damaging. It takes one day to damage a brand forever now, because when that spreads through the media and commercially and social media, it has ramifications that are far, far greater than they ever have been. The echo of responsibility is bigger than it has ever been. And I think boards will respect that and change to suit it.
Yeah, I agree with Christian. I mean, I think the teams as a service model, I think, is the way forward. I think, you know, from the gigs I've done recently, I think that people would love to come to an organisation like S&S and say, I have a problem, you know, crowd around it, give me some really good people around a table who can sort of give me something creative, not just the usual structured approach, something different, and then source me some great guys to deliver it. I think that will go down extremely well, and I think that concept will grow very strongly, I'm convinced.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely getting traction now in the market. I think people are coming around to the idea of how much wisdom is out there on tap, and that you can co-create a solution that actually works for an individual or an exec or a board.
Yeah.
And my personal view is I think that will push interim management into a different level.
Yeah.
And that's why this business was designed.
Yeah. Absolutely.
People don't just want to hire the same individuals from another company within their industry.
Yeah.
You know, there is a rotation and a churn of senior people within an industry that move just heads between organisations. And people are now looking for more of an injection of change and ability from outside their industry more than ever before. Industries aren't blocked to looking for people outside as much anymore. And that's something I've noticed recently coming through.
Yeah.
So I think on that note, I would like to thank both of you. You've definitely earned your pint in the King's Arms after this. You've been very open. You've shared a lot of your experiences with our listeners. So Malcolm, thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
And Christian,
thank you
very much.
Cheers.
So I hope you enjoyed that show. Lots of rich information shared and very much on point with where I and we as a change society want this show to go, which is real stories, real people, fairly unwashed, delivered to you for you to enjoy. So listen, if you want to continue the conversation, you know, please do follow me at @patlines on Twitter. I'm quite active on there, PATLYN for November, ES. Or if you want to explore more what about the Change Society is up to, check out our website, sullivanstanley.com.